Late Night Live. Ideas and opinions from around the world.
G'day, gladdies and potties. Welcome to another week of Late Night Live. And according to a calculation I've just done on the back of an envelope, it won't be long before it's my 1,000th week. In a prescient column or two, and in a couple of comments I've made on the program, the drama that played out at the launch, particularly focused on Prime Ministers present and absent. Clearly, Gough couldn't be there. He has the excellent excuse of ailing health. Paul Keating could claim, I'm sure he did, have a diary conflict, but nothing would have driven him to be in the same venue as Bob and Blanche. And, of course, poor old mate had to front and grin and clap through clenched teeth and clenched fists, I guess. But Kevin was not accompanied by his missus. Nothing could have dragged her there, I guess. He was accompanied, and this is interesting, by the one bloke who stood absolutely side by side with him, and that's Senator John Faulkner. Interesting bloke, Faulkner, and if and when he leaves the Labour Party, it will be much the worse for it. Anyway, we'll discuss all this and more with Laura Tingle in just a moment. Now, you can't mention anything in Australia without mentioning China. Think of a subject, China muscles its way in, and on our second story, we're going to look at what may be a growing crisis with the now ginormous Chinese banks. And then, an extraordinary story that I must confess total ignorance of, and that is that after the War of Independence, where the Brits were trounced, they had to find somewhere to send their Crims. They decided to send them to Africa. The experiment was such a catastrophic failure that they had to come up with a plan B, and guess what? The plan B was Australia. Wonderful stories on Late Night Live. Laura Tingle, how are you?
Philip, last week at a campaign.
Yes, our pain is almost over. Give me, tell me what happened today. I couldn't bear to look at the telecast. I just saw glimpses of it on news services.
It was a very strange campaign launch, which is the main set piece thing of the day, Philip. In a very sort of funny, pokey little room in Brisbane, deliberately quite hokey in feel, a very subdued, very small crowd. I think the journos outnumbered the party faithful, in inverted commas, about 2-1.
Well, Laura, a great many of the most prominent party faithful never got an invitation, including a couple of ex-presidents.
A lot of people didn't get invitations, or in the case of one former leader, wasn't allowed in as a media representative. It's not exactly clear who was allowed in or invited in and who wasn't, but it was sort of interesting when Kevin Rudd, for example, came in.
And got his inevitable and absolutely mandatory standing ovation.
Yes, but it was a very pro forma one. But the same was true for Bob Hawke, who could always raise a crowd at a Labor Party function. But it was all incredibly polite, and they were all on their very best behaviour, so no comparisons could be drawn between the levels of ovations for the various leaders. It was interesting, Philip. I mean, Bob Hawke was called on to introduce Julia Gillard, which in itself was a bit of an indictment that they had to go that far back to find somebody to try to rouse the crowd. But he is in his 80s, and it did sort of wander a bit. But
he got the date of his election out by a factor of 20 or 30 years, didn't he?
Well, 1953, 1983, you know, these are small matters. But I think the interesting thing is, some of my colleagues and I were discussing, was the language that he was using is language you don't hear from the Labor Party anymore. He kept on talking about the opposition as those Tories. When was the last time you heard Julia Gillard talk about the Tories? And there were just these sparks of the old hawk addressing a union rally or something in there, but it rambled a bit. But
of course, the fact that Hawke was cutting the ribbon would have added to Rudd's pain, because of course Bob was one of the first to call for his execution.
Well, I think there's that, and there's obviously the fairly ostentatious attempts by Julia Gillard to link herself as a consensus politician with Bob Hawke. I think that was all laid on a bit with the trowel. But look, I thought she did pretty well today. In fact, I thought it was a good speech, mainly because she actually was being positive for most of it. And let's face it, if you've been sitting here for 4 weeks listening to them ripping each other to shreds, it was nice to have somebody saying, well, this is why you should vote for me.
I understand that, there couldn't have been a dry eye in the House when she borrowed and improved on, yes, we will. Yes, we can, becoming, yes, we will.
Yeah, well, she towards the end of her speech, she said that she reminded everybody of Ben Chifley and the Light on the Hill, which is, I think, a fairly obligatory part of these things. Then she talked about Barack Obama and said that he'd, of course, said, yes, we can. And there was that moment of chill where everybody thought, oh no, she's not going to try to outdo them both. But yes, she did, even though she was being humble and she did it. But so, yes, we will.
Going back to Hawke, I understand that he hoped publicly that she would break his record as the longest-serving Labor PM. Oh, yeah, pull the other one.
Oh, Philip, don't be so cynical. Yes, you know, he did hope that, amongst other things, yes.
Okay, that's good. Now, polls over the weekend, and I'm sick to death of the damn things, still point to a tight and hard-to-read result. That's not what Hugh McKay was saying in terms of qualitative research on the program the other night. He says there's just no national mood for a change.
Well, I think that's right. The sense you get is that, and both sides essentially say this, people were saying this to me as recently as late last night from the coalition side, that the great phrase, the swing is on, they're saying the swing could still be on this week, but they're conceding at the moment that it isn't on. But we do have this very mixed picture of what's happening around the country, with swings going in all sorts of different directions and polls showing up all sorts of strange things. The younger personages in the Labor Party and the panickers are all sort of still terrified that they're going to lose. I think the coalition has gone from having that glimpse of hope that they might win to pragmatically thinking that they won't.
You and I have seen a few elections. Mm. I want to take your mind back a long time in ancient history to when David Cameron and Nick Clegg formed a government. God, that was a long time ago. Mm. Is something like that looming? Could we have a hung parliament?
I think that is a scenario. Because it is so close, all the numbers seem to range between Labor being, you know, too short of being able to form a government in its own right, and being two or three long in being able to form a government in its own right. Probably they'll end up getting home a bit more comfortably, just, and everybody will say, what were you all talking about? But the scenario would be a bit different from Britain in this circumstance. I mean, that was really a situation where a third party got such a slab of the vote that they had to be incorporated into a new coalition government. We're talking here about two independents possibly not forming a government with Labor, but the Labor, as it would be in the Senate, being reliant on the crossbenchers.
So Katter et al. Would be the first line, or rather, they'd be the people that Labor would have to deal with first before the Greens.
Well, presuming, well, yes. Well, yes and no. It's possible the Greens could still win Lindsay Tanner's seat of Melbourne so that you'd end up with four independents in the House of Representatives. But I think what you say is nonetheless true in the sense that probably Labor would want to deal with a Green in the House last amongst the crossbenchers in the House. So they've got three options other than the Green if the Green gets up: Bob Katter, who's very colourful, Tony Windsor, the member for New England, and Rob Oakeshott, the member for Lyon, which is Mark Vaile's old seat.
Mm. They're all interesting, all interesting blokes, actually.
They are all very interesting blokes. I think when this has been sort of vaguely discussed over recent months, but everybody hasn't really looked at it too closely, and everybody's presumed that since all three of them, the existing independents, that is, had their roots in the National Party, that it would be that they have been presuming that those three votes would go to the coalition. But in fact, both Rob Oakeshott, and who's relatively new to the parliament, but particularly Tony Windsor, really are true independents. And you might remember
and Bob Katter is an old style Labor bloke in many of his attitudes.
He is, and if you look at his voting record, I suppose the thing that differentiates him is he tends to just vote against the government, whoever it is, on on a wide range of subjects, on a very consistent basis. But Windsor and Oakeshott crossed the floor with Malcolm Turnbull to support the government on the final draft of the ETS. Tony Windsor didn't, but one of the reasons why he didn't vote for the ETS that time around, he told Parliament, was that he didn't approve of the way Labor was exploiting Malcolm Turnbull's weaknesses politically, while at the same time depending on him to negotiate a deal to get the ETS through, and he thought that was really disgraceful.
Laura, the fact that there was no mention of climate change in the launch, the belated launch, I think will be a fillip to the Greens.
It will be, and one of the things, you talked about how sick you are of all the polls, which is understandable, but the latest one that's out today, News Poll, shows quite an extraordinary thing, which is that Labor's primary vote didn't move in the last week. The Coalition's vote dropped one percentage point, and the Greens have gone up another percentage point to 14%. Now, the Greens have been up at levels of around 12% in the past, in previous years, but never this close to an election, and for them to actually be trending upwards is a really extraordinary sign of how unimpressed people are with both major parties.
Laura, you're a tonic, and I guess you need one at this stage as we rush towards the finishing line. And Laura's been writing some really good stuff for The Fin, where she's the chief political reporter. This is LNL on ABC Radio National, etc. Coming up, the China Syndrome.